Greetings, friends. As part of our non-duality series, we are busy exploring the question, who is God? And like the question, who am I? This is an open-ended question rather than one to which there's a set of definite answers or truths. And if you want to honestly explore this question, you need to want truth more than wanting to be right, more than wanting certitude, safety, comfort, or social affirmation. You have to be willing to be open to the real, rather than to mental constructs and overlays. You need to be willing to receive truth on God's terms, not on your own terms. And you have to be willing to be stripped of all your theories or theologies, even your names for God, if they keep you from actually encountering the presence of God. The Spirit of Truth, Ruach, shines a light in all the areas where our knowledge has remained stagnant and safe. And if we are willing, she is a wind who will ignite the flames that consume our small, confining comfort zones and open us to the wonder and wildness of expansive life. And so an honest engagement with this question really is a wild, open-ended adventure of discovery. And in talking about this question of who is God, I'll speak from my own personal experience and share a few images that have been helpful for me on the journey. And as you'll see, these images of God have been in a continual state of shift and evolution, with a sense of beckoning beyond just the image to the presence who is beyond all images or words. And we need to keep that in mind whenever we're talking about God, or life, or ourselves even. But the reality is so much more than the words. And we really need to hold our words with humility and keep opening our hearts to the mystery, to the beyond. And I share these images not to convince you to believe in my ideas or perspectives, but to encourage you to open your heart to this question and to the Spirit to breathe fresh insight into your sense of God, and to invite you to sense the beckoning of the loving presence who's calling you to venture outside of what may have started feeling like a dutiful, stale, or cramped expression of your spiritual journey into this wild, open-ended adventure into the vast unknown landscape of the divine. So here are a few aspects of my own journey with this question. As a teenager, my understanding of the Christian faith was very doctrinally oriented, and I feared becoming misled from true doctrine, which just so happened to be the doctrine of my particular denomination. Isn't that always the case? And I used to pray in terror almost that the Spirit would lead me into all truth. And although those fears were prayed from a very misguided vantage point, I believe that the Spirit of Truth has been responding to my prayer, but not in the expected ways, not filling me with more theories, certainties. But what has happened in my spiritual journey has been a gradual dismantling of my projections and certainties, and with that a growing sense of freedom, trust and delight in God, and in this wonderfully strange and unpredictable unfolding of life. Early on for me in my Christian upbringing, there was the image of Jesus as the image of the invisible God, and for many of us, Jesus has given us a beautiful sense of the expansive, passionate, self-giving love of God. But we've also inherited many overlays that obscure the essence of Jesus's life and message. And so this is an ongoing question of discovery for us, and an invitation for us to live into What does it mean to embody the same radical love in our lives? And we'll explore that in the last talk in the series, so I won't take that any further now. But one of the images that Jesus used for God, one of his predominant images, was of a father. And to get a sense of how radical it was for Jesus to use this name for God, it's important to remember that at the time there was a predominant attitude of fear and trembling before God at the time, so much so that when it was time for the Jewish high priest to venture into the Holy of Holies, he would do so with a rope tied around his ankle in case God struck him dead, so that they could pull him out without being struck dead themselves. There was that sense of real terror of the holy. And into this context, Jesus used the name Father, Abba, which is more like the familiar term Daddy. And by doing this, Jesus was introducing a shift in consciousness from God as a distant, rumbling, terrifying thunder to an intimately close, caring relationship. It was a name that communicated the freedom, familiarity, and fearlessness of a child playing on its parent's knee. However, I think this image became more entrenched and limiting than the way in which Jesus used it to refer to his intimate sense of abiding connection with God as a loving father. And for many of us, the father image can be very constricting or oppressive and entrenches damaging patriarchal attitudes. And unfortunately, our society is historically based on the patriarchal religious model, and so has become very stuck because we haven't looked beyond the words or image to the divine beckoning that lies beyond these. And so, as a balance to the dominantly male images of God that pervade Christianity and most religions, I found the exploration of feminine images of God incredibly helpful. As a student, when I was exploring this area, I was astonished to discover how many feminine images there are in the Bible. In all of our English translations of the Bible, the Holy Spirit is referred to in the masculine form, using a masculine pronoun. But in Hebrew, the Holy Spirit, or Spirit of Yahweh, is referred to as Ruach. That is a feminine noun. And also the word for the wisdom of God is Sophia, which is also a feminine name. There are also references to God as birth mother in Deuteronomy 32, verse 18. God is a mother bear robbed of her cubs in Hosea 3, verse 8. God is a mother eagle hovering over her young in Deuteronomy 32, verse 18. And many more. Those are just to name a few of the images. And Julian of Norwich described in her visions that she experienced Jesus as a mother. And she wrote, "A mother can give her child milk to suck, but our dear mother Jesus can feed us with himself, and he does so most courteously and most tenderly with the holy sacrament, which is the precious food of life itself." Such beautiful maternal images there. If you've not explored feminine images of God, it's a rich and profound area of exploration and a very needed balance to our male-dominated images that too often go unchallenged and therefore remain unconsciously entrenched and limiting. Together with these nurturing parental images of God, I found the image evoked in Deuteronomy 33, verse 27, enormously helpful. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This gives a beautiful sense of the expansive, tender, and holding embrace of God that's always eternally here. We're already in this enfolding embrace of God. And this image has been really helpful in breaking open my sense of God from a limited personified image in my imagination who might just abandon me if I don't behave, to one who's always unconditionally ever present, holding me in whatever is, never not holding me. In this, I find the poem of St. John of the Cross very helpful. It goes, What is grace? I asked God. And God said, all that happens. Then God added, when I looked perplexed, could not lovers say that every moment in their beloved's arms was grace? Existence is my arms. So I well understand how one can turn away from me until the heart has wisdom. Existence is my arms. Another description that I've found very helpful is of the Spirit as the Ruach of God, where Ruach means breath, wind, and Spirit. This has deepened my sense of the profound intimacy and non-dual immediacy of God, as threaded into my every breath, breathing me into being and giving rise to my existence moment by moment, breath by breath. And then some years ago, I came across a poem of John O'Donohue's, I would love to live like a river flows, carried by the surprise of its own unfolding. And for me, this opened up a new area of exploration into the image of God as a river, the river of the fullness of life, my own life as well as life as a whole, the creative source and immensity of the flow of what is. And the invitation to allow my own life to flow freely and surrender with this divine river. And I found working with this image very freeing, realizing the futility of pushing against life in my attempts to resist and control the flow, and instead finding the delightful freedom and lightness of being carried along with the current, carried by the surprise of the unfolding of life. Entrusting myself to this divine river with gleeful abandon. And this has broadened at times into the image of God as the ocean, holding and sustaining me, inviting me to let go of my turbulent life at the surface and to move deeper into the silent, vast depths of God. With this has been the invitation to allow my sense of self to dissolve into this ocean, as a river enters the sea and disappears. This poem by Khalil Gibran expresses it brilliantly. It is said that before entering the sea, a river trembles with fear. She looks back at the path she has travelled, from the peaks of the mountains, the long winding road crossing forests and villages. And in front of her, she sees an ocean so vast that to enter there seems nothing more than to disappear forever. But there's no other way. The river cannot go back. Nobody can go back. To go back is impossible in existence. The river needs to take the risk of entering the ocean, because only then will fear disappear, because that's where the river will know it's not about disappearing into the ocean, but of becoming the ocean. And this leads me to one last image to share that I've personally found very helpful from David Frenet, a teacher of centering prayer. And he describes that when you're at the movies, you're so caught up in the drama of the movie that you don't notice the screen that is there all along, silently, secretly holding the movie. And he uses this as an analogy for God, who's silently, secretly holding our lives, no matter what the drama is that appears on the screen. And this has helped me to begin to attune in my own contemplative prayer to the subtle but never absent holding presence of God. And through all of these images, there's been a progression from a narrow, personified, separate, and limited sense of God out there, who I have to please and cajole into meeting me, to a more vast, encompassing presence, the source and substance of existence itself, but not in a blank, cold, unfeeling sense. There's such an intimate tenderness and compassion as the character of this secret embrace, and an immensity and quiet vastness that continually beckons from beyond all images, words, or constructs. At some point, we need to let go of all of our images of God, no matter how hopeful they've been at some point or another, because every image of God is infinitely less than the transcendent God. And gradually, we move toward letting go completely into the vast, apparent emptiness and nothingness of God's self. Meister Eckhart wrote that the highest act of surrender is for God's sake to give up God. And Thomas Keating puts it this way, that God gently but relentlessly undermines all of our thoughts about God. And the two questions, who are you, O God, and who am I, are intertwined in the invitation into the spaciousness of unknowing and loving silence. As 2 Corinthians 5 verse 7 puts it, we walk by faith, not by sight. It's a faith journey. And James Finlay writes about this faith journey. In faith, we find a certain yet dark inner realization of that relationship that holds the secret of our ultimate identity. In faith, the weight is shifted from our own poor ego into the infinite abyss of God, in whom alone we find our ultimate self and our consummate joy. In faith, we find ourselves in darkness, but a darkness in which God clasps our hand. We hear God's silent breathing, one with our own, and in dark luminosity, feel God's eyes penetrating to the depths of our soul. And in recent years, I've been sensing the invitation to entrust myself to God in silence and unknowing, to fall more and more deeply into this cloudy mystery, who is the core and source of my own being. And so this is increasingly becoming an inner journey, falling into the quiet immensity of my own inner being, because this is where the mystery of God is to be encountered. Beyond doctrines, theories, words, or images, into the mystery of encountering the cave of the heart. I want to end with sharing a delightful way that James Finlay has of describing how earlier on in our spiritual journey, God comes out of the cave where God is hidden, and gives us a little cuddle every now and then, but then disappears back into the darkness of the cave. And after a while, God starts to beckon to us, saying, come in here with me. But to enter the cave, we cannot insist on doing this on our own terms. We enter on God's terms. So the invitation here is one of letting go, of total surrender to the mystery, to the quiet, tender, vast immensity, who is our source and sustainer in every moment.